Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Marvel Movie Talk right here on Geekscape, what we like to consider our sacred timeline. As always, I am Christian Blatt. With us this week, our pal Nate Miller. Nate, thanks for being here today.
Hey, glad to be back.
And we're going to go in honor of Miss Minutes. We'll go clockwise, and our own Mr. Minutes is, of course, Count Eric Connor. Hello, sir.
Hello, and I have with me a crossover. The crossover you didn't know you needed or wanted, but here is. Come on in, Blue Beetle. Blue Beetle made a very brief cameo.
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, we've definitely branched off into a different timeline there, but. I mean, it's great to see Blue Beetle, and you know, good luck with the sequel, Blue Beetle. And of course, Michael X Shirley, branching into our timeline from his own, our pal David Brody. David, thank you for being with us today.
Hello, everybody. Sorry I'm late.
No, that's all right. We were just getting started.
I was dragged through time.
Exactly. And I am excited to be back talking about Loki. There's some other Marvel stuff to talk about, but we're going to dive right in, talk about episode 2 of Loki. And Nate, and I'll ask David the same thing after, but Nate, you weren't with us last week. So let's talk a little bit sort of more overall, but your thoughts on these first two episodes, kind of picking up from the end of season 1, Nate.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, as we talked about before, Loki was my favorite of the Marvel shows, so I was like very cautiously optimistic, but I really enjoyed the first episode. It was fun. It was funny, but not like dumb funny. And this last episode was also really good. I'm really enjoying the pace. You know, it's only two episodes so far, but it seems like there's not going to be a lot of dragging. There's a lot of like things moving and things happening. And yeah, I guess I forgot how much I really enjoyed the chemistry of the cast too. I think it really adds, and a lot of the characters that were more kind of like background in the first season now having a little bit more development. I'm really enjoying. I think it's really cool.
And I have to say, I am not typically a fan of Key Lime Pie, but damn, did they make it look good. David Brody, your favorite kind of pie. No, the first two episodes, just sort of your thoughts as we, you know, I was just thinking about next week we'll be covering episode 3, and it's always that point in these Disney Plus series. So next week we'll be talking about the season being half over. But we're only talking about two right now. And David, your thoughts on these two.
Well, I think it's safe to say it's no She-Hulk. You can take that for whichever way you like.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
I loved the first season. I thought it asked a lot of questions, and I think we're on the road to finding out the answers to some of the questions. But I thought the two episodes were well written. The action's where it should be. I think I agree, Zaniac, that the level of comedy was just right. The level of emotion was just right. There's a moment where you're really hoping that Mobius gets a jet ski, you know? So, and of course the key lime pie looked great. I think there's something with the key lime pie, whether it's Soylent Green or there's something.
Oh my gosh.
There's something going on with the key lime pie that either drugs them into submission or helps erase their memory or downplays their desire.
I thought it was made up from less successful Kang variants, ones that weren't able to conquer quite nearly enough.
Maybe, but
so
it's
then
green,
they were ground
so
up into key. It's very green though. That's
I'm thinking though it's ground up Loki because it's green. So, or She-Hulk for that matter. So who knows?
No, Loki would be more on brand.
Yeah.
Eric, your thoughts, I'm sure Blue Beetle loved it, but your thoughts on this second episode of season 2 of Loki.
I'm still getting my head around the idea that Key Lime Pie is people, and I want to reach my arm up in the heavens. Like Charlton
Heston. That's variant. Key Lime Pie is variant, people.
Variant. by the way, an automat that only would have key lime pie might be the automat of my dreams, actually. So I found that very comforting.
Just to throw in on that before you jump in, I mean, Daniel went right to the green that we should have all thought about. Maybe we're all still a little bit, have a little bit of PTSD after Secret Invasion. But I love that idea that it's some kind that it's Skrulls who take the form of pie. All right, back to you.
Secret Invasion, sort of, Secret Invasion is like the bad touch of the MCU, basically. None of us will ever quite get past it, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. It is our Macho Grande. We'll never be over Macho Grande. But your thought on episode two, Eric?
You know, I
could you like that, David?
I love that. Love that.
I'm very striker.
All right. I knew what I was doing when I referenced Airplane.
I was moving on. You brought me back. I completely agree. I've been enjoying it. I think, you know, one of the big complaints we had about the show Who Shall Not Be Named, it was that it didn't feel, even though it said it had one director, but what I've been reading more and more behind the scenes is that I don't think that was the case. I think there was a lot of hands trying to fix something that was never meant to work. And in this case, it does feel uniform. That's one thing about this, feels like a TV show. I think, and it sounds like such a small compliment, but it's not, because I think that's been an issue for a number of these MCU projects, is like, they don't necessarily feel like TV shows. They sort of feel like a chelated gelatinous mess of not quite a movie, not quite a TV show, but this one feels like TV. And I am perfectly happy to go back and hang out at the TVA, and agreed, the chemistry is great. So I'm been enjoying it so far. I think it's a nice return to form for Marvel.
Yes. I think that, even the Rolling Stones put out a clunker every once in a while. You know, they can't all be winners. You know, we don't have to all love everything whenever it happens. And obviously, I was being a gracious host to our guests, but there was an order and a rhyme and a reason to which I asked everybody what they thought. As we see in the chat, Craig Robinson, I look forward to seeing whether Michael X. Shirley will be joining the conversation. Of course. He wouldn't miss it for all the key lime pie in the world. Burdened with glorious purpose. How do you feel that this episode of Loki compared to the first one? And in what way, Michael, has it strengthened your glorious purpose?
I hated it. I just hate the show. I hate this stupid, stupid show.
Oh, okay. I know that... you know, I think that that's very blunt. I love the way that you're to the point. Can you elaborate?
The hair flips, like we were like, what, 2 minutes in and we were getting more hair flips? There was a scene
where we had three Lokis, so there was a lot of hair to be flipped.
It's like he's on a swing. Like, what's the point? Like, didn't that make his neck hurt? Like, it's so over the top. It's like he practically puts his head between his knees before he throws his head back.
You sure you watched the right Loki?
I guess.
What if there was an entire episode of Alligator Loki? Do you think you would enjoy that show?
Much, much more.
Yeah, okay. No, I think we've landed on the one that you would like. And I'm sorry.
No hair. Alligator has no hair to flip, so it's a win.
Thank God.
You know what?
Be flipping them horns.
Did you feel like you wanted to have key lime pie or perhaps a McDonald's apple pie? There was a lot. This was a very pie centric episode.
Possibly, it is my favorite pie, key lime.
All right. See, we're getting on to, all right. So you can't 100% say you hate everything about the episode. The choice in pie was strong.
choice in pie.
How do you feel about, we had him a little bit again this episode. So one of the big differences from last season, Michael, was Kihi Kwan, who people know as Data from the Goonies. And of course, Short Round from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And, you know, he was
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Well, yeah, I know. But I was going to say he was in Everything Everywhere All at Once, playing a character that wasn't named Data or Short Round. But I challenge people to tell me what this character's name was. Do you feel that he is a welcome addition, or do you hate the show so much that you just
he makes
just
it even worse
thing. He's just a new thing to hate. Yeah exactly. Well, you know, there was a great ruler who once said, your hate only makes me stronger, and use it to strike me down and I'll only become more powerful than ever. Does the hate make you stronger, Michael?
No.
Oh no. So we're not even having you shooting lightning out of your fingers at some point. No,
can you at least give it the compliment of it making you elicit a strong feeling, whether positive or negative, unlike the other show?
It makes me miss Secret Invasion.
Whoa!
Oh, okay. Right, now you're just trying to be provocative.
No.
Now you're just
that's
saying
just the key lime pie talking.
I think that Nate, you do have a point, because there's times where you watch something and you're like, oh, I feel nothing from that. It's not even good enough for me to hate. They have put so much time and attention to detail in there, Michael, that the fact that they you hate it so thoroughly is an accomplishment. What if there was an episode where just no Loki at any point, Sylvie would probably have to be in it. But if Tom Hiddleston sat on an entire episode, you still wouldn't be on board, right?
I don't care for her.
Okay.
But I'm liking this alligator Loki idea episode.
Did you like
I'd rather watch the interrogation scene. What?
Did you like the interrogation scene? I figured you would love that. Where he
it's
was
okay. It was okay.
Somebody experiencing intense pain in a unique and different way. Do you feel like, Michael, that when you're watching this, the runtime for this episode was about 42 minutes. Do you feel like you're spending 42 minutes in like a magic box that keeps closing in around you and squishing you, possibly going to squeeze the breath out of you?
Maybe. I like the guy that makes him sign like everything he has to say. We've been through him before, because he doesn't care anything about Loki. He has like the same excitement for Loki that I do.
That's fair. All right. Well, look, I sign it. Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate that. Go ahead.
I was just asking if we're all going to chime in on Obi. The Obi character.
Yeah. I want everybody to kind of weigh in. You know, I mean, the first episode, obviously, he had a lot to do. There was a lot of action. And I think in this episode, and since you brought it up, David, I'll go to you first. What did you think about it? You know, it's definitely okay. He's working on something bigger that's going to factor into the episodes coming. But give us your thoughts on Obi this week.
I like the character in moderation. I think he's adorable, which is what the role is supposed to be. He's supposed to be the cute scientist guy. My only question to the room is, and I don't know if temporal loom was a term in Marvel prior to this show, or they created that thing, but I'm sorry. When he says it with his accent, temporal loom sounds a lot like Temple of Doom. And I don't know if that's on purpose. But when he's, I'm not doing the accent. You all know what I'm talking about.
No. Yeah. It's, you know,
I kept thinking he was saying there's a Temple of Doom. We have to fix it. I think he's a good character in moderation. I think if they go to him every second episode for help, but if he becomes like Scotty on the Enterprise where they're going to him for everything, it'll be too much. So I think in moderation.
Yeah. I think that that's fair. I definitely agree. So I guess the question for Eric is, does the Blue Beetle even watch this episode of Loki, or he's just excited that there's a screen in front of him?
You know, there's lots of excitement happening in this house. They woke up to a strange bearded man in their house. I mean, yeah, and they seem, you know.
Oh yeah. We've been getting some comments on your internet connection, and some of us would say that.
Yeah. Am I okay right now?
You're okay right now. Some of us would say it's refreshing that at least the people of Georgia that don't have a lot to wake up and be happy about this morning. But that's not really for this show, I suppose. But even some of us, David, who made atrocious picks before the MLB postseason started on the Black Cast, you can still enjoy moments, here and there. When you take them as consolation prizes.
But this is a Phillies house. Everyone here loves.
Oh
yeah, no, everyone here is thrilled with what happened here today.
All right, so you just took the air out of my balloon.
Christian and I hate either way. If you're a Braves or a Phillies fan,
Well,
we're not.
It's all right. No, yeah, exactly. Eric's on our side. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
But he just has the most interesting travel plans. Nate, your thoughts on OB? I think that David's onto something. Whenever somebody's there is like, you know, the comedic, not even relief, but he sort of, you know, injects sort of a weird air into it. I think using him sparingly is good advice. I feel like we've done okay with him so far. What have you thought about the advent to OB this season, Nate?
I've enjoyed him. I haven't really felt like he's got too much screen time. So, I mean, mm-hmm. It's only been two episodes.
Sure.
And I think in terms of like what they're, the things that they're trying to reveal about the TVA that we don't know, I think his character is probably going to be very integral to that. Like he's named Ouroboros. Like it's, and like, that's gotta be for a reason. Like that's not, you know, just going to happen for no reason. And they keep talking about this, you know, often they talk about cycles and anytime you talk about time travel, there's always talk of cycles and circles, and the Ouroboros is the, for those that don't know, the snake eating its own tail that kind of creates that infinite loop. So I think the like he's the nerdy guy that we go to comedic advice to kind of solve this problem, I think is kind of like a ruse. And we're going to see later that he has more involvement than either because of the memory thing he doesn't remember, or there's actually something maybe more insidious going on. Because remember, this is the show that had Miss Minutes, you know, this tiny little animated thing that everybody loved at the end of the season, be like, oh yeah, actually there's some stuff you don't know about that's going on, right? Yeah. So I kind of see the same thing happening with OB, with his character. I don't think they bring an actor like that on just to be in a couple gags for a couple episodes. His involvement is part of the small bit of complaints I do have so far with this show, and that there was a lot that happened at the end of the last season, and going into this, they did a good job of picking up the action, but not a lot. They didn't do really good with like establishing where all those pieces that they have laid on the floor, like where they go, because they're just adding more questions in terms of like, how does the multiverse work? Is the multiverse the same as timelines? Is this timeline only apply to the universe that is 616? Do other universes have their own different timelines that branch? Like there's so many big meta questions that I am kind of concerned about them sticking the landing on. And because of that, I am trying to just enjoy the show as like a comedy, you know, a superhero comedy that has Owen Wilson, who I really like, and I think he's funny, and I'm just kind of like, I'm just rolling with it. I'm trying not to think too hard about the meta stuff because I'm not super confident that it's going to get really resolved in a satisfying way. I'm trying not to overanalyze stuff like that. I'm trying to focus more on the character things and not think about the implications of the TVA and like, I don't know. There's just so much that they've done great with like kind of doing a little bit of character progression in the last couple episodes, but in terms of like the meta narrative, they've just introduced now this new thing with the loom, and it just adds more questions on top of stuff that we already kind of don't have a great understanding of.
Right, exactly. And you know, I think that the way that Marvel MCU has worked, it can sometimes be hard to enjoy just sort of standalone story without figuring out like, yeah, but where does this factor into everything? And this is obviously a big one, you know, to use the example of She-Hulk, you could tell, okay, well, this isn't going to, you know, really, you know, tie into the Kang dynasty or anything. You knew that was standalone. Daniel Drew had a comment. I wonder if OB was the first TVA agent. He does remind us in the chat that he had messaged me because, Eric, last week you had talked about the branching timelines, with all, you know, not being mentioned with all the multiverse. So Daniel has this theory that he thinks is because all the stuff in Loki is emanating from one single timeline. All the variants are not from other universes. They are all potential alternate timelines of the main MCU Earth. So he thought about the fact that He Who Remains says something is different and he doesn't know what's going to happen next. It matches up with in WandaVision, excuse me, when she becomes the Scarlet Witch. So it's connected only because that was part of the sacred timeline, but anything that happens that's not happening in that timeline might not be noticed. So it gets very difficult when you start dealing with multiverses and branching timelines. And the fact that one exists just so that there can be a McDonald's in Oklahoma that that Sylvie's finally happy working at, you know. But I would definitely like a behind the scenes on filming those sequences, because I want to know is that a functional McDonald's? Did they make it from the ground up? Was there one Christian. That just happened to be old? And yes, sir, Eric Connor, you have the floor. Eric, I know what a dramatic pause is, but it's a little melodramatic. Yeah. Now I know you're faking it.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. That time you were faking it. Go ahead.
Nate, one thing you said there too, I think there's almost too much that's off camera. You know, so like even this idea of what they're doing, those different timelines, you know, yeah, they show it in like a previously on, but it loses a lot of its dramatic impact when it's relying on our knowledge of season one, but not really showing, like, we see people go off and yeah, they have a ton of ammunition, but they're not really helping us feel the abject destruction. And they're saying, oh, they're killing billions. But I think one of the issues is because they are relying almost too much maybe on our knowledge of season one for those moments to have the dramatic impact they need, because the characters are reacting like it's, you know, the end of the world. And yet, since we're not really seeing it, it actually hampers what I feel like they're trying to do, as far as the, almost like the guilt of, look at this mess we've created.
Yeah, no, I think it's very tangled, and you don't want to try and untangle all of these different timelines and threads as you go through it. You know, Michael, I was thinking about how the episode starts. You know, they're in pursuit of this X5, and you know, he had made a bit of a name for himself as an actor. They find him in London, 1977. If you got one of those little temp pads and you could open a door, where would you want to pop into, Michael? And what sort of devoted fan base do you think you would have? Some might compare it to Jonestown or possibly David Koresh. I like to think it would be more like the Swifties. You know, you would be a generation Swifties. And I know Eric has a bad connection, but I didn't think it was that bad of a question. But what do you think if you could go through one of those doors, Michael?
Man, that's a really heavy question.
Do you want to ponder it for a little bit, and I'll maybe circle back to you?
Maybe the 1920s. I think that would be fun, but
not Prohibition.
Like the Roaring Twenties, like back 20s, yeah. Back alley, secret door places.
Okay. It seems like it could be fun, and you know, history showed us that there was no price to be paid for living like that, you know, for living carefree and paying attention to your own doorstep. There was really nothing bad came out of that. But you know what I have to say about the 1920s? It does look fun, you know. But you know, what do we know? All right, so that's now we have an assignment. Michael, I would like, you don't have to actually buy a costume, but I would like an artist's rendering of 1920s Michael Shirley.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about X5. I did find the interrogation scene to be sort of one of the most interesting things, at least in these two episodes of the season, because it was Loki getting to, you know, be a little bit more Loki the way we're associated, you know, we're accustomed to seeing him. And you know, yet this was a guy who seemed to have basically all the answers. What did you think about sort of that advent? I'll ask you first, Nate. This X5 character, you know, sort of trying to get information out of him that Loki correctly surmised he did have that information.
Well, I really enjoyed the dialogue of the first of him getting under Loki's skin and then getting under Mobius's skin too. I thought that was awesome. But again, like I said earlier, I really enjoyed seeing, like, it's one thing to see a bunch of variants of Loki, right? Like, which is cool. But that's more of like a, oh, I know that character. Like, oh, look at those other different versions. But now we're getting essentially, like, obviously everyone in TVA is already a variant. But we're seeing a variant of like how he would be if he was not in the TVA and he was like the life he would like to lead with his hair long. And so I thought just the contrast of him between the two episodes was really cool. So yeah. I was really enjoying the character and enjoying the back and forth. And I think the interrogation scene was good. Like it, I knew that Loki was not, that it was all part of like the plan. I mean, obviously, because they said that. I'm not sure how much of a misdirect that was supposed to be of him going in there, but it was good. At the beginning of the episode when they were chasing him down and Loki starts like actually doing Loki stuff, like right before that, I was thinking to myself, we haven't really seen Loki do a lot of Loki stuff in a while. And then just like that, it happened. So I was like, okay, the timing is pretty good on this. It's nice to see some magic. You haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, no, he definitely leaned on it. And I thought it was interesting because you have those two moments. You have sort of getting under the skin, telling him, you know, that you're a villain, you're a loser, which is the nature of most of my texts there, Connor. And, you know, so far, there's no lies in those texts. Well, yeah, we always have to start. It's our playful banter, you know.
It was
keep hoping. But I think that sort of getting that, and then there's that moment, it goes back to the key lime pie scene. Loki's like, hey, remember that time where I was so mad at my brother and my father that I invaded New York? Now, of course, realizing that this Loki is like a branch timeline Loki that walked directly out of being defeated in Avengers Tower. I guess it was still Stark Tower at that point. You know, so it's like, it's really, I mean, I don't quite know how long it's been, but it's like, it's been a couple months, maybe, you know, it hasn't been that long since he was that Loki. This isn't our Loki that we got to see in like Ragnarok and things, you know. This is, it took me a moment to think about, like, he's looking back on something that actually wasn't that long ago to him, you know? And I think leaning back into it a little bit, I do agree with you, Nate. It wasn't really a shock that Mobius was in on that, but definitely making X5 think that was the case. What did you think sort of those sequences? I'm going to ask Eric first, because I feel like he pays for the internet there by the minute. And I feel like I just saw him put a bunch of quarters in. So
he's time slipping right now.
Or he went back to 1920 like Michael wanted to, and he's using 1920 technology.
Yeah, so he's got great stories. Go ahead, Eric.
This is going to take a while.
Sorry, eclipse stuff for a sec. Yeah, no, I was using the crank to keep the modem going. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
For now.
Yeah. No, I mean, basically for Eric to get into our StreamYard room, he had to double click on the phone receiver and said, operator, give me Algonquin 6578. Go.
KO5923. You know, I think as far as like Loki, this is something Marvel's now done a couple times, right? The sort of reduce something to a sentence. Like him talking about the invasion of New York with like, yeah, I was in a real bad place that day. The thing we talked about with WandaVision, it's like, yeah, don't worry, it's Jersey, whatever. You destroy half of Jersey, you're fine. Work on the other half. And so I think they tend to like, you know, it feels like this is something they're still, despite all the work they've done in creating this beautifully connected cinematic universe, I think they're just keep having these problems how do they link the TV with the film side? How do you take Loki, who was responsible for, I'm going to guess, several hundred thousand deaths in New York, and now make him Loki, the one that Michael Shirley still hates, but most of us still now like. And that makes for, it's a little bit tricky. In some ways, as funny as that moment was, it kind of felt like it swam upstream from what they've been doing with that character. And in some ways, I think when you put a, you know, sometimes you don't want to put a bell on it.
No,
sometimes
I mean, it always depends on the moment in time. Yeah, it depends on the moment in time. You know, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, Anakin Skywalker. Oh, you the guy who literally murdered a temple full of children Jedi's. That Anakin Skywalker. Oh yeah, we love him. Yeah, great. The guy who you see in a black mask at the end of Rogue One, just throwing people around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he's very cuddly because look, he doesn't have the mascot anymore. I'm like, all right, let's not forget everything. But they, you know, whether it's this Loki or the one who, meets his demise at the hands of Thanos, whichever Loki it is, it's true. They definitely try to be like, yeah, 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 but don't worry about that stuff, you know. And in comic books or wherever, when a character is reformed, a lot of times you just have to deal with the fact that's like, you know, Jean Grey's like, well, I didn't eat that planet. The Phoenix Force ate that whole planet. I would never eat a planet, you know? I think it is interesting to sort of get to see flashes of that Loki. You can't ignore it entirely. You know, if he was entirely sanitized away from the god of mischief, the god of lies, the god of tricks. David, I want to kind of ask you the same thing, watching sort of the reminders of that Loki in his interactions with X5, David.
Well, it's sort of the if you watch The Walking Dead, it's the Negan effect. Negan was killed the best characters on the show, and now you're supposed to forgive him and like him and root for him, and they're going out of their way to show him saving other kids and, you know, being a great guy and a leader, but he's still the guy who, you know, in the real world killed the franchise by killing Glenn, spoiler. So it's hard to like him. But
if he hadn't done that, he could have never gotten into that road rage accident with I forgot her name. That was like trying to be funny. I forgot. I've been talking about the show Beef. I forgot the comedian's name for a second. Anyway, sorry.
That's all right. As far as Loki, yeah. First of all, just remind me, everyone, is magic prohibited at the TVA?
I don't. Did they say that in season one? Is that something?
Because right, we commented we don't see much, and I don't remember if he used magic at all at the TVA.
He had a collar on for a significant amount of time,
right?
Too.
But now he doesn't. The reason I'm bringing it up is when he's in the interrogation scene, which I thought was great, the way X5 right was manipulating them and you know, putting their personality out on the table for everyone to see. Except if you're X5, you're talking to a god. Right. You're saying, oh, you can't hurt me. You don't have the authority. Loki could rip his insides out with the snap of a finger. And yet he had to get that machine to put him in a box and do a whole ruse with Mobius locked out playing good cop, bad cop. You're threatening a god. And all you are is a variant with no power. It seemed like that was that didn't make sense when you think, if you don't think about that, it's a great scene. But if you realize he's a god.
Yeah, so what you're saying is Loki could have made a box like that just by putting his hand up, and then the box could have...
He didn't need the cool machine with the remote and the buttons. I mean, well, you know, the whole thing, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I think they could have embellished and, like, you know, turned him into a frog temporarily or, you know, done some other fun things with the buttons that he was told will do some funny things, like, you know, turn him into a midget, you know, a little person or a giant person or whatever. But they just did the box thing, which Loki can do the box thing by himself. So I just think they forgot he was a god for that scene, in which case I'm on Michael's side. It was terrible. But I'm also on everybody else's side, and that I enjoyed it. But to your point about the movie universe, when they're running down the alleyway in 1977, they did pass a poster of a movie starring Kumail Nanjiani's character from Eternals.
Nice. I did not catch that, actually.
That is a Herbie and the Love Bug movie poster up as well. Oh, but they did acknowledge the Eternals, which, you know, who cares?
Interestingly, we know that Herbie the Love Bug is canon in the MCU, but yes. Herbie Fully Loaded is not.
Not so terrible. That's very important.
Because I like to tidy up these branching timelines in conversation, as Nate pointed out, I just didn't have Ali Wong's name on the tip of my tongue. I have gone to see her perform, and I just couldn't remember her name for a second. So anyway.
I do want to say really quickly.
Go ahead.
The God thing didn't bother me, because as the TVA has been presented to us, they have pruned many Loki variants. Many gods they've captured, they've pruned. Like, I think for us as mere mortals, right, we hear God and we think of the you know, Thor and all them, and like, yeah, they're crazy powerful, they're way above us on tiers, right? But from the TVA's perspective, they're above even that. They're like guiding the timeline as a whole, so they're going and pruning gods. They captured him, so like, he's obviously not, in comparison, that strong to what the TVA can offer. So I understand why he would not be like totally, oh my God, that's a god here. Like, he could do anything to me. And also, from my understanding, I think, at least in the MCU, Loki's powers all revolve around like illusion and like just deceiving people. So he can like create light and images and stuff, but outside of like, you know, some green energy projection here and there, we haven't really seen him exert any type of like telekinetic power or like actually changing somebody's shape or something like that. Unless I'm mistaken.
He did this episode where X5 had the pad in his hand or whatever he had in his hand, and he flung it out of his hand. He did when they were in the alleyway with the fake people.
Yeah.
And he had him trapped. He did use telekinesis in that scene.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
I think you're right, though. I think the parameters to which this version of Loki has abilities is we don't know exactly what it is. It does seem like what he's particularly good at is, you know, mischief, pretending to be somebody else. Yes, he can create other versions of him that, you know, they're not actual humans who can touch you. Just you see them, you know, he can create illusions and things like that. So we don't really know the answer to that. But I agree that we do have to suspend, like, he probably, at the very least, he could have hurt this guy without using the machine, but it definitely added a layer to it. And I don't know, maybe that was all part of Mobius's plan.
Well, I think that was the fun of it. Yeah, no, Christian was saying, I think the fun of it is like, it's the greatest American hero thing, right? You get the super suit, but no instructions. So we have no idea. I think it added great tension that it was some device.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, I know what you're saying, though. It does add that. And, you know, Eric had messaged me that he knows that the connection's not strong where he is. And, I said, no, it's fine. But I think Eric will just hang out in the chat, and I'll put his comments up on the screen, sort of the old fashioned way. But we will see you next week. Hopefully, hopefully somewhere closer to a cell tower.
Unless he wants to call your cell phone and you can hold his phone, up to the mic.
Believe me, I thought about that. There goes out. At Count Eric Connor, but lucky. We appreciate him taking the time. So we did get a question in the chat from Eric, which was, Michael, are you able to name three things you liked about this episode? The pie could be one of them.
No.
And the ending could be the other one.
Yeah, the end credits. You established that last week. That was the thing that you liked.
So, I guess.
Well, don't
I'll
worry.
Try to think of another reason.
All right.
Did you like the cashier in the McDonald's scene that asked Sylvie if she wanted anything?
I mean, he's probably my favorite actor.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
He's your favorite character. He's all of our favorites. And look at Sylvie making sure that his mom would come get him. But And by the way, I was talking about this, with my wife. How is there? I just expected there were going to be Loki Happy Meals at McDonald's right now during, like, how are they not doing this tie-in? You know, I mean, you're spending so much time in it. And I thought there was something about Loki sauce at one point, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't understand how they're not doing it. Maybe they feel like the show's not for kids, but
not really.
No, they do all the Marvel movies. So I don't know. Seems like a missed opportunity, but it's hard.
Maybe they just know it's not that great of a show.
I mean, maybe, but when you see the things that there were Happy Meals for, you know, yeah. I mean, there were Happy Meals for the second Space Jam. All right. So, you
know. Yeah. Can I ask a McDonald's question?
Please. Since we can do another hour if we're going to start taking McDonald's questions.
Let's just one thing. So when they first went back, it's 1977, correct?
McDonald's is in 1982. The very beginning of the episode is 1977.
Okay. So yeah. They show the McDonald's sign. It says billions served, right?
40 billion served, yes.
Right. Billion. It said billion, right? Yes. So that didn't change until 1993 from millions and millions. Right. So that's continuity error, unless on that timeline.
It's a branching timeline.
Right. So that timeline sold more burgers by a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Right, exactly. Because those burgers were Soylent Green. Those right. burgers were failed Kangs and failed Lokis, so they were ground up.
Delicious.
And, you know, yeah, they might have actually been just, you know, if you've ever seen the video of the paste that they make chicken McNuggets out of, that might be it.
Isn't it great, though, that they got rid of 90% of the timelines, but not the one Sylvie was working at?
Yeah, no, I did find that convenient, because yeah, she goes through the door, and I'm like, oh, it's still there. Well, what were the odds? Like, here's a question. Why would you destroy that timeline? You know, there's really no advantage to it. But in any case, I'm glad that, four of us, including Eric, at least four of us are enjoying visiting with Loki. And Eric does want to chime in that timeline. The shakes have milk and the McNuggets have actual chicken. Maybe that'll
do it.
So wait, and the burgers have actual beef? All right. Wait a minute. I mean, this
in
is
that timeline. The shake machine works.
Right. Exactly. You can actually find the Shamrock Shake around St. Patrick's Day. This sounds like the craziest timeline ever, but I can understand now why Kang made sure that it remained. Anyway, I'm glad that some of us are enjoying the show and looking forward to chatting about it again next week. I think that there's a lot of talk about missed minutes. I feel like we end the episode, they find where Renslayer is. So I think we're gonna get a big mid-season advance of the story. You know, they've been definitely laying some groundwork the last couple weeks, and we'll just have to see where we go. And by the way, Eric is letting me know this isn't even in the he wants it to be a surprise. Never mind.
can we play a game, Christian, for next week? If I happen to be so lucky to be here, can we watch episode 3 and make our predictions and of what Michael will like? And then before the episode starts next week, we all predict the one thing Michael will like, and we'll see if we're right.
But we can only pick one thing.
Thing.
Michael,
the episode is not an option.
Yeah, I was about to say in credits.
Right, exactly. Right.
Michael has to try to find something he likes.
Yeah. And Michael, I need that you can hate everything else. You can hate 99.99% about it, but you need to find one thing you like. And it would be, here's an example. Oh, the lighting in that scene in the interrogation room, you know, or they had a prop that I think was really well made. Anything like that.
Yeah, the drink looked good.
You know. Yeah. Right, exactly. And Eric says that the over under of what Michael likes will be 0.5, and Shamrock Pie and key lime shake. Daniel, I think you've really planned out a great lunch. So there'll be more to revisit, but before we end the show, I did want to talk about some Marvel TV news, which came up since our last episode. A little reset button on the upcoming Disney Plus Daredevil show. The idea was basically Disney is overhauling the entire TV business. So it's two things. So in mid-June, they paused production because of the writer's strike. And I guess according to, this is for our audio audience, according to the Hollywood Reporter, they had filmed fewer than half of the 18 episodes, but it was enough for including Feige to feel like that the show's just not working. So they have removed the head writers, and they're doing a little bit of a reset on it. So, and it's just the latest in a series of growing pains for Marvel Television. With the most recent of which is a show that we covered every week on this show, Secret Invasion, obviously. And, you know, there's a quote here. We're trying to marry the Marvel culture with traditional television culture. It comes down to how can we tell stories in television that honor what's so great about the source material? Honestly, it's not that hard. You know, you just have to pick the right stories to tell.
Yeah,
you
Netflix know? Did it.
Netflix did it absolutely, and you know, it was done Netflix in and it was done in animation for at least X-Men and Spider-Man. You know, you can argue about the Iron Man, Fantastic Four, Hulk animated series. You can say what you want about those, but I think they've shown that this style of storytelling works in an episodic way. Netflix is obviously the best example because they did three seasons of Daredevil there. And two of which I feel were very great, and one of which was still pretty good. But I think that they did a good job with those.
Well, what do we do with Kevin Feige, though? I mean, how does the man in charge of a struggling TV situation wait for a writer's strike and 7 to 8, maybe 9 episodes to be filmed before he takes a look at it and decides it's not good?
Well, I think that that's something that you're finding. You're finding that a number of projects that could have resumed after the writer's strike and plan to resume after the SAG-AFTRA strike, they've had 5 months to look at it and realize, oh yeah, this thing didn't work. Let's just cut our losses. There's shows that filmed episodes that are just not going to come back. There's you know, projects that aren't going forward that were guaranteed prior to the strike.
But Daredevil's obviously a flagship show, right? You're giving them 18 episodes. It's your first 18 episode show, and you don't look at the dailies. You didn't look at episode 1, 2, and 3 before the strike?
We don't know that. We just know they had more time to review that than they normally would have because they paused in the middle of production. The other thing that we're not talking about, too, is the terrible reception that Secret Invasion got. So they have been filming along, watching the dailies. Everyone's like, this show is like actually unwatchable ass. This is terrible. And so they went, maybe we should watch those dailies again. Because if they have another show like that, especially one like Daredevil that is more like, you know, mainstream, more popular, has a pre-existing fan base because they're bringing Charlie Cox over, and it's 18 episodes. If those first three episodes are ass, they're done as far as like Marvel. Like the confidence that people are going to have in the TV side is going to tank very low.
Well, and every indication is that they're not happy with the way Echo turned out. You know, and they moved it a couple of times. They're going to dump the whole series at once, the whole season, but, you know, whole series. And honestly, I think when you look at the corporate structure, I think Bob Iger being back he's taking a lot longer of a look. Kevin Feige was able to do whatever he wanted when his instincts translated to box office and popularity and they liked everything. But that is definitely not the case really post Endgame. You know, it's very hit or miss since then. Kind of, you know, when the TV show started in general, people were pretty happy. There were some diminishing returns after the first ones we had WandaVision, we had Loki, we had Falcon Winter Soldier in whatever order. And, you know, not everybody loved all those shows, but in general, nobody was like, oh, this is garbage. And you started to hear some rumblings with She-Hulk, which I'm on record that I enjoyed. I had fun with it. But Secret Invasion, except for when Michael is comparing Secret Invasion to Loki, you don't hear positive things about Secret Invasion. You found the one angle in which to say, hey, was Secret Invasion really that bad? But apart from that, and Daniel, our pal Daniel had sent me a message and, you know, it's, the problem is, you know, anybody can put an opinion out there, but there's this idea that, you know, Loki was the one show that they thought would be multiple seasons. Most of them are like 6-episode projects, like Moon Knight being an example. You've never heard a rumble about another season of Moon Knight. You've never heard about going back in for Falcon and Winter Soldier, because what that really did is it set up Brave New World, the Captain America movie, you know? So I think there's something to be said about that, but Daredevil is an example of like, well, they're going to do 18 episodes, but I'm sure they'd, you know, do a couple more rounds of 18 after that, if it goes well. And I think that's really the thing, is like, this has to be good. You know, I think that it's the magnifying glass itself has gotten a lot bigger and they're looking at everything.
Yeah.
And yeah. And Eric makes the point, and because it's in the chat, we can actually understand his comment. With this overhaul, there's going to be a lot of fat and meat cut off the bone, but I think that's all right. And Daniel
has a way with words.
Yeah, they said that the Daredevil show was initially a procedural, but different than the Netflix version of the show, and now they're going to switch it to something else. Yeah, I mean, I think that we've always known it's going to be different than the Netflix show. But
which is probably why it sucked.
Yeah, why change it?
Well, because I mean, that's the thing, because that character works better. I mean, the Netflix show was such a good adaptation because it was consistent, at least with the Daredevil that, you know, the Daredevil that I would read back issues from in the early 80s, the Frank Miller, Klaus Janson, and then onward to Born Again, which that's the title of this show. Somehow they're telling a story that they already told in season 3 of the Netflix show, but I digress. But that tone fits him really well. The tone for Luke Cage worked well. I don't want to fight with anybody about Iron Fist, so we'll just talk about him.
Iron Fist was the Michael's Loki of mine.
Well, the second season was much better because they had the decency to keep it to 10 episodes. But Colleen Wing was the star of the second season
great.
Of Loki. Yes.
Do you think the new writers?
Sorry, what was that, Nate?
But
I was just saying the fight coordination in the second season was so much better too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And as an Iron Fist apologist, I will have to point out that Finn Jones was hired right before they started. So for the first season. So the second season was able to be at least a little bit closer to what the vision was they want. Whether that worked or not, that's besides the point. That brother and sister, those actors were terrible. Anyway, what were you going to say, David, about this show?
Oh, I was going to say about the writer's strike and how it affects Marvel. A story came out this week that they're going to possibly scrap the 6-episode thing and start doing real shows now, like real full-length series more often. And I'm wondering if that comes out of the writer's strike demanding, you know, longer series and longer jobs and longer contracts, if that also ties into, they've done the research that 6-episode events are fine and all, but they're not like the Daredevil, maybe the closer model, or 8-12 episodes, maybe a better model, and it fits in with the writer's strike. I'm just wondering if you think the strike had something to do with that, or just the research had something to do with that.
I think that the impact of the writer's strike is just what I was saying earlier, is having time where you're forced to take a breath, calm down a little bit in a way that happened with the pandemic. You know, at least at the onset of the pandemic, they weren't able to keep filming everything. So they were able to stop and reassess what they were going to do. You know, I mean, they were pretty far down the road on some things, but there's things that we heard about, you know, movies that seem like they're never going to happen. So yeah, I think that at least as fans, as consumers of these various shows and movies, we can hope it translates, having 5 months to kind of put everything on pause could translate into better content. If the writer's strike had happened a year ago, maybe we never would have gotten Secret Invasion. And you know, they would have realized like, oh yeah, we can just not do that. And Eric asks a very important question. Better fight scenes, Iron Fist season 1 or Queen Latifah's helmet wearing body double on the Equalizer? I think you know my thought on that. Obviously, I'm always with Latifah. And Eric would say it's a perfect storm, COVID into massive creative issues and a strike. Yeah, I mean, we're sort of in a little bit of a trajectory, and look, the stuff that has come out, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is an exception. Spider-Man No Way Home is an exception, but the Marvel content, and you can argue that Spider-Man's really Sony's, you know, the Marvel content has not been as well received as it was leading up to Endgame, you know? So I think
the COVID and the strike, absolutely, if we're talking about the business, the industry as a whole, like an immeasurable impact on how it has changed everything. We live in a post-COVID world. On top of the strike, like, all of that stuff is different. But if you're looking specifically at Marvel, in my opinion, even in the vacuum outside of those events happening, we're just getting Marvel fatigue. Like, we're reaching that brand oversaturation point of where, like, every year they announce 5 new shows and 4 new movies and 3 movies that are coming from 10 years from now. And, like, now we're on phase 7 and there's all these characters to keep track of. And, like, when the MCU started, you were taking something which had a popular fan base but wasn't necessarily like marketable to a larger general audience. And so there had to be a little bit more kind of like creative drive to, like, we have to make this work. We have to, like, put a little bit more effort into it. And it has felt like, especially probably a little bit before, but especially since after Endgame Infinity War, it has felt like this ship has really just kind of been on autopilot. They're like, everybody loves our stuff now. We don't have to apply too much effort. Just spread it out as much as we can so we can make as much money as possible from all these different avenues. And I think now that they're seeing that the brand, because the quality has not stayed as consistent, the brand cannot withhold that strength of stretching out so wide, and it's starting to falter, and it's starting to cause overall damage to the brand, and it's not making the money. It's losing the money. So now they're going to pull back, hopefully, to something that is more controllable and something they can give a stronger, more focused project of, you know, of these things, and that will give people more confidence to, like, be invested and be, like, excited for more projects that are coming. So I think that it's just kind of a natural, anytime there's a big bubble of something, right, it's going to pop, and then they have to kind of reassess what are the realistic expectations for us. And I think that's what we're seeing right now, is them realizing that we can't just throw everything at the wall because people like Marvel stuff. We need to be more conscious of what we're throwing at the wall and, like, how it's going to last after the 6 months it comes out and people, like, totally forget that it existed. Well, now you just spent, you know, $200 million on a show.
I think that, you know, as you know, the success probably created a bit of cockiness, really, because of the fact that, you know, look, when we were getting our first MCU movies, I would think things like, man, I don't know, does Captain America work in a movie in, you know, 2008 or whatever year that was, you know, and Thor's not going to, you know, audiences aren't going to sit through Thor, you know? So they find a way and they have those successes, but then they also keep going down and down the list. Like, well, this worked, so maybe this will work. And the Guardians of the Galaxy is the perfect example of, like, those characters who, you know, even somebody who read comic books, those are not the characters I thought of as Guardians of the Galaxy, but the concept of Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm like, no, that's not going to work. Who's going to want to see that? Oh, I do like Rocket Raccoon. You know, so once they had that, they're like, well, if Guardians of the Galaxy could work, then Eternals should work. I'm like, okay, well, there's a little bit of a leap in logic there, you know? And Eternals could have worked, you know? I mean, maybe if you had 4 of them, you know, that would be my first. That would be my starting point. Don't have quite so many of them. But anyway, I think that Eric also had this point. Secret Invasion brought out the Michael Shirley in all of us. And we all have a Michael Shirley in us. And, you know, America's sweetheart lives in all of us. In any case, this will be interesting to see as, you know, news starts to trickle out. You know, Echo's still not on the calendar, by the way. What If is on the calendar. That also got pushed back a little bit. But, you know, what are we going to get after Loki in terms of live action content? I assume it's Echo because it's done, but I don't know. We'll just have to see. And to Nate's point, talking a little bit about Marvel fatigue, you know, here on Geekscape, you know, you have hosts and fans who consume content in a way that they don't have superhero fatigue, but you can talk to people who maybe are like, oh, I really like those movies. No, I would never read a comic book. And the problem is that you run into Marvel fatigue because other studios make superhero movies too. Mm-hmm. And those also aren't great sometimes. I'm not going to name names, but sometimes they don't turn out great. And even when they do turn out good, sometimes they're not popular and they're not successful. So, you know, DC putting out a couple of movies that maybe people don't love, that doesn't help Marvel. You know, I think if DC puts out, you know, the year they put out Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman, and Aquaman wasn't that far after, before they got to Justice League, that probably helped Marvel. People like, oh, I like superhero movies. Then you see, you sit down to see enough superhero movies where you're like, oh man, again. So I don't know. But I think focusing on better quality out of the TV arm of Marvel Studios, I think, is essential. It could have prevented Secret Invasion. But we'll take a look at that. We'll take a look at episode 3 of Loki next week, right here on Geekscape at the same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. But until then, Nate, where can people find you?
I am everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Zanga at Doglike Nate.
And David Brody, if people have enjoyed hearing from you and they're like, boy, I wish there would be a way to get that Brooklyn boy and a friend of his into my life a little bit more often, where would they look for that?
Well, for that specific purpose, Christian, I'm glad you asked. We created 6 years ago the Brooklyn Boys podcast, available all over the place.
I'm so glad that I asked, that I had the thought.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, and you can check out the Blackcast from about a week and a half ago if you want to see David, myself, and a few other people just make atrocious picks for the MLB postseason. I could ultimately still be right. The Astros could win the World Series, so at least I have that.
Same.
I have that.
Same.
So, and Michael Shirley, if people want to bring a little Michael Shirley sunshine into their life, how do they open the window and let you climb in?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at I Hate Michael Shirley and Twitter at, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Michael X Shirley.
Excellent. And if you're enjoying this conversation and you enjoy our Loki recap episodes, please check out this special episode that Eric and I did. It was posted on Wednesday. And now, because I have this stupid McDonald's background, we talked to Rob Kuttner, who is the co-author of Scott Lang's Look Out for the Little Guy. And we did a whole show with him. You can find that on the Geekscape YouTube channel and our audio feed. We spoke with him for an entire hour about the Scott Lang book, Look Out for the Little Guy. And if you want to see more of me, well, boy, do I have a fun plug for tonight. At 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, you'll see me as a guest on Yo! Remember the 90s? We'll be talking about 90s horror movies, and Silence of the Lambs had not been chosen. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. So anyway, you can see me there. And of course, Tuesdays, who are these broadcasters at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Who Are These Podcasts YouTube channel and the Blackcast everywhere, BLADTCAST. That is all the time we have for now. We will see you next week. And as the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
Happy birthday, Dad!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.